You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now present our program, Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism, with Roy Shoman.
Hi, it's Roy Shoman, and welcome once again to Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church, or seen the other way around, that celebrates the completion, the fulfillment, the full realization of the promise of Judaism in the Catholic Church and its sacraments. I have the great pleasure today of having on another enthusiastic Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church, who will give us his witness testimony, explain how he found his way into the Catholic Church, and then talk about a little bit, I hope, about what he's found in the Catholic Church. And I'm very much looking forward to that. But before I bring him on, I did want to spend a minute or two talking about this most blessed period we're in the church calendar, the period of Lent. Now, some people mistakenly think of Lent in terms of deprivation or fasting, or what they lose, so to speak, because of the additional restrictions of Lent. But I think that a more sensible way to look at it is to see it as, I believe, the most blessed season in the church year. The reason it's the most blessed season in the church year begins with what the purpose of life is, what the meaning of life is, why were we created, and what is our number one task to do between birth and death. And the number one task we have to do between birth and death is essentially to get to heaven and to get others to heaven and to perfect ourselves as much as possible, to grow morally as much as possible during life on earth, to give ourselves the best possible eternity in heaven and, of course, the best possible chance of getting into heaven in the first place. And Lent is designed for exactly that. It's designed for our purification and perfection. And, of course, one very sensible practice during Lent is to go to confession. The church rule is, of course, to do one's Easter duty and go to confession at least once a year. But, in fact, I think that it is very much in the character of Lent to invite us to make frequent use of the sacrament of reconciliation. And at the risk of exposing myself a little bit more than usual, I wish to share what I have, just as an example of the blessing of Lent. It's been very notable to me that usually what happens during Lent is that I become aware of a whole new layer of the onion of some characteristic fault or real impediment I have to growing in, I don't know whether to say in union with God or growing in similarity to Jesus is probably a better way to look at it. As something that I'd been totally unaware of up until then, and all of a sudden the veil drops from my eyes and I see this whole new fault to strive to overcome. And this Lent has been no different. And the fault that I have found to overcome is quite a common one. It was rather shocking when I realized it. I'll just give an example, which is, you know, you're driving on the highway in traffic and someone changes lanes right in front of you and you're forced to step on the brake and slow down so as not to hit them. And you think in your head, what a terrible thing he's just done. You know, what a jerk to have done that. And it may easily be the case, I know it's the case in my situation, that I will do exactly the same thing to somebody else and not think twice about it and not think I've done anything wrong because I'm just trying to change into a faster lane to go faster. When one thinks what a jerk he is, what a terrible thing he's done, not only is one being a hypocrite, of course, because you do it yourself, but perhaps even more importantly, one is judging the moral content of that action on the basis of the effect it's had on you, right? And one's not looking at how right or wrong that changing lane was. One is immediately condemning it because it's had a negative effect on you. It's inconvenienced you. It's made you step on the brake. The truth is, the moral content of an action is not dependent on the effect of me. It's dependent on the effect on God. And when one does that translation and interprets the moral content of other people's actions in the light of the effect on oneself, one's actually putting oneself on the throne of God, replacing God with oneself as the measure of the moral action of others. Anyway, when I saw this, I was rather appalled, and of course it's an ongoing struggle to do anything about it, but I just did want to share that as an example of a fruit of this beautiful season of Lent, and of course to invite you, the listener, to open your heart to what the Lord wishes to give us during Lent in terms of course, our own moral advancement, our own improvement, for, of course, our own eternal benefit in heaven, as well as improving our ability to have a positive effect on others. So perhaps all a digression, perhaps not, perhaps it'll flow into what I talk about with our guest. But with that, I would like to invite our guest on. Just before I do so, I almost forgot, of course, this is a live call-in show. The number here is 866-333-6279. We're very, very happy to get callers. I suggest that perhaps we should spend the first 15 or 20 minutes just listening to our guest. But after that, certainly by the midpoint of the show, if you have a question or comment or wish to join the conversation, you're more than welcome to call in 866-333-6279. And with that, I'll invite on our guest for today. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am, Roy.
Great. Well, thank you so much for volunteering to come on. I have, as you know, told our listeners almost nothing about you. So I'll let you start with a clean slate, you know, as I sometimes say, what's a nice Jewish boy like you doing in a place like this?
Right. Okay, well, I'll give you a little bit of background on me. I think that's kind of important to talk about my conversion story. And I do believe conversion is sort of the culmination of life experiences. But I grew up in Long Island in the late, 60s and 70s, and my parents were both Jewish. But we really didn't we belonged to a Reformed temple, and I think, I was bar mitzvahed because my father was bar mitzvahed, and that was sort of the extent of it. And I remember being a little, confused when I was growing up and being bar mitzvahed. Well, how come we're not celebrating Hanukkah and these other Jewish holidays, traditions? But particularly since, I don't know why this was, but my family celebrated the purely secular aspects of Christmas. We exchanged Christmas gifts and presents. We had Santa Claus. We had no idea what we were celebrating, of course. But I look at that, why did that happen? I think, in terms of my family history, I think my grandfather, one day my mother and her sister in the Bronx were coming home, and they saw Christmas trees, and they asked him if he could have a Christmas tree. And I think he had a rather strict upbringing himself in a yeshiva in Jersey City, and I think he sort of rebelled a little bit. He said, sure, let's have a Christmas tree. But that's probably the first thing, as I look back and I point to, is that, well, my family was open enough that we sort of had a Christmas tree, and we celebrated these, secular aspects of Christmas, even though I didn't know what I was doing. So I was bar mitzvahed in, 1973, and, with the rare exception, of course, of praying to God whenever I was in trouble or needed help, I really didn't give much thought or really practice my religion until 1992 when I got married. And at that point in time, of course, I was completely uncomfortable with getting married in a Catholic church. I refused to get married in a Catholic church. I don't know why. I didn't really know that much about Catholicism, but I put my wife through a lot. I didn't realize it at the time, but she had to get special dispensation to get a priest to come out of the church and be present. And we were married at a small country inn by the rabbi, which was actually the official celebrant. And our plan was to expose the kids to both Judaism and Catholicism. I agreed that, in order to become Catholic, in order for my wife to get a sacrament, I had to agree that we raise the children Catholic. And in my mind, that meant, well, they'll expose them to Catholicism, and I'm going to expose them to Judaism too, and then they'll pick, whichever one that they want eventually. I do remember, again, another thing, thinking back at the time, and we were talking to Rabbi and priests about our plan. I remember a rabbi, when I told him my plan, we're going to expose these kids to Judaism and Catholicism. I remember a rabbi telling me, "That's not a good plan, Richard. Pick one. They're not that different." I said, "Wow." You know, of course, I totally didn't listen to his advice. I said, "No, I'm not picking one. I'm sticking with my plan." And for many years, I tried to find a Jewish synagogue that would be accepting of my wife because I still wanted to practice, you know, my Judaism. At one point in time, I found a group of Jews called humanistic Jews. They were perfectly willing to accept my wife, meaning that we could come and participate. She didn't have to convert. And I asked them what a humanistic Jew was, and they said, "Well, just come and, you know, you'll get the hang of it." And it took me about a month or so. I think we went to, you know, Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah services with them, and they were very accepting. And I finally figured out that humanism, they believed in the culture of Judaism, the ethics of Judaism, and the history of Judaism, but nothing with reference to any supernatural being or God. And as easy as it would have been for me to say, you know, would have been comfortable to just stay in that situation, "Sorry, no, I can't do that because I believe in God." And in any event, so then fast forward till about, I enjoyed, you know, going to Mass with my wife occasionally because I like doing things together as a family. She was very good about exposing our family to all the Jewish traditions. And like, in fact, I think she wound up learning more about them than I actually did. But when I turned 40, around the year 2000, I started, you know, my midlife crisis was, well, I probably should figure out for myself, was Jesus the Son of God or not? And I decided, well, I don't want to rely on what my Jewish relatives believe because I know that they never really, you know, figured it out for themselves because they weren't, you know, very devout. And I don't want to believe what my wife believes merely because she believes it, but the fact that she and a billion other people, I think, believe it gave me more reason and enthusiasm to check it out. But I started reading, so for me it was more of an intellectual thing. I'm a lawyer, and I began to attend at the invitation of some of my partners, some Christian lawyers group meetings, and reading some of my own. And the more I read, the more Christianity, you know, made sense to me. I remember one of the early books I read was written again by someone else who was a lawyer. I think his name was Gordon Pierce. I think he wrote a book called From Skeptic to Christian. And he explained all the basic principles of Christianity and grace and forgiveness. I didn't know any of this. And also debunked all the major heresies and criticisms that were leveled over the years. And then Christianity started to make a lot of sense to me. I also read the Gospel, which struck me as, I'd always wanted to read the Bible, and I always started reading Genesis and fell asleep. And then someone said, "Why don't you start with the New Testament?" And I couldn't believe how relevant it was to modern life and mine in particular. I think for me, some of the passages with Jesus talking about, you know, don't be anxious about what you're to wear, what you're to eat. You know, your Heavenly Father feeds the birds and everything. I said, "Wow, that's exactly, you know, it's exactly the way I feel." And I think probably the most influential was C.S. Lewis, and I read Mere Christianity. And I think from that, I really agree with him. You can only believe three things about Jesus, you know, liar, lunatic, Son of God. And using my lawyer reasoning skills, I just felt much more strongly, much more likely that it's Son of God. And if it's Son of God, you know, then you really have to act differently and start get serious about it. At the same time, this is around 2002 now, I was going through a bad situation at work. I was asked to leave the law firm I was working with. And then finally in spring of 2003, my family and I went to Mass together. And as I entered the church vestibule, I was drawn to some posters, how they can easel up, and they had posters on display which contained photos and conversion stories of people who are coming into the church. And I just happened to see a story. Oh, look, there's a Jewish guy who came into my church. And anyway, I contacted this man. I got my wife to find out his information. They called the church, and he was kind enough to meet with me, and he told me about RCA, Rite of Christian Initiation for adults. So soon thereafter, I started the inquiry program, and it started to make sense to me. About the same time, my father had passed away, and I learned the night he passed away, I was woken up suddenly at 4 a.m. in the morning, and I don't know why or how, or later I learned out that it was the exact time that he passed away. And I kind of took that to believe two things. One, he's okay, don't worry about me, and two, you're on the right path. So soon thereafter, I started RCA that fall, and I came into the church at the Easter Mass in 2004. So I'll stop there and see if you have any questions or follow-ups. So I think that's sort of the succinct story of my conversion.
Well, I have lots of questions, but you don't have to make it too succinct. But you mentioned the C.S. Lewis's logic that you can't just say that Jesus was kind of like a nice rabbi, because that's not what he said. He either was lying about who he was, or he was a lunatic, delusional about who he was, or he was the Lord, the Son of God. But of course, in being the Lord, and in fact being the Messiah, Mashiach, he was the Son of God and the Jewish Messiah, right? The Jewish Messiah, which is kind of the whole point in some sense of the Old Testament. So I want to ask you whether, when you started thinking of Jesus as the Son of God, did the fact that he was the Jewish Messiah mean something to you and change your view or understanding of Judaism?
Well, I was very struck by when I started going to Mass, and like, wow, every single reading is from the Old Testament. I mean, almost every single Mass, you start with an Old Testament reading, and that it's all based on the Jewish Messiah. I didn't really know that much about Judaism to draw that linkage initially, and one of my first questions to my RCA director was, this makes all sense to me and everything, but how can I come to believe that this guy, is the son of God, that Jesus is the Son of God? How am I going to come to believe that? And he said, don't worry about that. That will come, if it comes. And, I learned how critical that was, because it's a whole foundation of Catholicism and Christianity, is that Jesus is the Messiah that was foretold. They couldn't recognize him back then because it wasn't exactly what they were expecting. But for me, at least, I realized that, I would say, Roy, in one of our RCA sessions, we did a reflection on one of the readings in the Gospel where Jesus turns to his disciples and asks, who do people say that I am? Some say Elijah, some say a prophet, but who do you say that I am? And so we had to reflect on that. We had to walk outside, walk around our church. We came back, and when I came back, I said, well, he's the Messiah. I said, wait, did I say that? Yes, I did. I did say that. So, that's how it came apart. It came about for me, because I didn't really know, the tenets. I don't remember, I guess, being taught, in the little bit of Hebrew school that I had, how essential the Messiah, was to the Jewish faith.
Okay, I'm just going to speak a little bit for myself rather than try to put words into your mouth. Looking back on Judaism, I mean, when I was growing up, I was kind of serious about my Judaism. But the difficulty with being serious about Judaism is actually doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, right? Because we're the chosen people, but what's that mean? Chosen for what? Somehow we're supposed to perfect the world or redeem the world, but, it certainly doesn't look like that. What's that mean? Winning more Nobel Prizes than anybody else? There are all of these suggestions that are intrinsic to Judaism without being resolved. And they become totally transparently resolved with Christianity and the truth of Jesus. So, in fact, it enabled me to believe in Judaism in a sense for the first time when I became Catholic, to really believe in it, because there were no longer any internal contradictions, because all of those internal contradictions were introduced by the refusal to recognize Jesus as the Jewish Messiah. So I just want to throw that in there, but there's no reason, obviously our upbringings were different and our relationships to Judaism were different, but I wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, I mean, I do consider myself, when people ask me, did you are you a convert or did you convert? I said, no, not really. I consider myself a completed Jew. And maybe I got that from reading your book at some point, but that's what I tell people, and that's how I feel.
Yeah, I refer to myself as a Jew in the Catholic Church, because if I was Jewish before I became a follower of the Jewish Messiah, why should becoming a follower of the Jewish Messiah make me stop being Jewish? It should make me more Jewish.
Yes.
And we know from St. Paul in Romans 11, it's not really the topic of the show, it is sometimes the topic of the show, but we know from Romans 11 that the church is composed of Jew and Gentile. And it certainly looks like, when you read Romans 11 carefully, that the church will be composed of Jew and Gentile until the second coming, until the end of time. He uses the metaphor of the olive tree, like this olive tree of salvation, and that olive tree was Judaism, and it was originally the Jewish people, and the roots were in Judaism, and some branches were broken off. Those are the Jews that didn't follow Jesus, but they were only broken off to make room to graft in wild olive branches. Those are the Gentiles.
Right.
And when all the wild olive branches have been grafted in, the original broken off olive branches will be grafted back in. Those are the Jews who enter the church near the end of time. And then the olive tree composed of grafted in wild olive branches and regrafted in native olive branches, which is the church composed of Jew and Gentile, will be ready for the second coming. You know, it all makes sense, but it makes so much better sense in the light of Christianity. But let me ask you another question, which is, you know, it's wonderful to enter the church and have all of have everything make sense. But do you find that becoming Christian has changed you, has made you a better person, has had an effect on your moral conduct and so forth?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. And maybe my wife should answer that question more than me, but I am a much calmer, better, more loving, more forgiving, more empathetic, you know, person than I ever would. I didn't convert, you know, to become a better person because I thought I was a pretty good person. I probably was, you know, a pretty good person, but I never gave any thought to, you know, really morality or how am I doing or how my soul is doing, you know, or anything like that until I became Catholic. And you know, the fact that we have, you know, these the sacraments and these you know, I guess I'll call them rules, but you know, to be Catholic we have to follow certain things like going to confession, you know, at least once a year. But I definitely believe, you know, I've learned so much from, you know, like penances and things that priests have told me in confession, and have grown so much, you know, spiritually, you know, from that. So I've definitely become. And the other thing I'll share with you is when I you know, told some of my friends and some of my Christians who were Protestants that I was coming into the church, I was going to be Catholic, they said, why'd you pick that one? It's the hardest one. It has all these rules. And I explained, well, a Jew who believes in Jesus, I sort of feel a connection like those early Jews, like St. Paul. In fact, I picked St. Paul as my patron saint. Maybe that's why I've stayed involved in RCA for so many years. But what I've come to see over the years, Roy, is that following the rules and receiving the sacraments regularly, it just makes life on earth feel like heaven, just so much better, because I think God knows what makes us happy. It's just such a blessing to have these things. And without them, you know, without regularly going to confession, I wouldn't even think about, well, how did I treat that person today? As you said, you know, I cut that person off. I do find that if I pray while I'm driving in the car, which is something I would never think about doing, I do drive a lot more calmer, a lot more relaxed, as well. But I definitely feel like I've become a better person once I become Catholic. A better father too, a better parent.
Wow, that's true. What do you you attribute that to, in part to the rules and in part to confession, but do you attribute it also to the Eucharist?
Well, yes. And the Eucharist was something I'd have to say So when I said to myself, okay, I can believe Jesus is, you know, the Son of God, and he's the Messiah, you know, is this, you know, host actually the body, blood, soul, divinity of Christ? Okay, I'm going with that. But I have so much grown in that belief since then, where now, you know, when I receive the Eucharist, I say to myself, I'll stake my life on it. When the Eucharist actually falls on the floor and see what happens, you know, by accident, what people do, it's really awesome. But to me, the Eucharist has definitely made me better, and praying. One of the other things I remember telling my RCA director, which again, probably different than your upbringing somewhat, but I said, if this all makes sense to me, I like it, but prayer, I don't have time for that, I'm never going to pray. I don't have time for that, I'm not going to do that, it's silly, whatever. Well, I mean, of course, God gave me a big wake-up call, because I immediately got the Magnificat and praying twice a day, and definitely prayer and spending time, you know, receiving the Eucharist and spending time, you know, with the Blessed Sacrament is very, very beneficial to me. And in fact, just recently, I know I heard in the beginning, you know, talking about Lent. The way I like to look at Lent is not taking something away, but adding something. So for me, this Lent, I decided to add going to daily Mass. And again, what you get at daily Mass is that Eucharist. And I just feel so much more at peace, you know, every day, and start the day off right, going to Mass first thing in the day. It takes like 22 minutes, and it really is following the first Jewish commandment, which is love God above all things, with all your heart, with all your soul, number one, first. And anyway, I feel that's been an unbelievable blessing to me, that we actually have, you know, Jesus that we can receive every single day.
Amen. Well, we've come to about halfway through the show. We usually take a short musical break about halfway through. And it also gives an opportunity, for, among other things, Richard, I mean, it gives you an opportunity to think if there's, you know, anything you want to add or something. So we'll be back in a few moments.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now return to our program, Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism, with Roy Shoman.
Hi, welcome back to Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church. And we have today the pleasure and honor of having another enthusiastic Jewish entrant into the church on air with us, Richard, telling us a little bit about his journey into Catholicism. Richard, do you want to start with something, or do you want me to start with more questions?
I just wanted maybe to talk a little bit more about Lent, what my practice is too, because, you know, we're so busy in our lives, like there are some things like that you do have to give up some things or fasting. And I had a wonderful homily by a visiting priest at the beginning of Lent, who really explained, you know, in a way that made sense to me, the way I really think to look about it, that you have to make room for God, which is why we fast from some of these things. So, you know, in order for me to add more things, I have to take something away. And that taking something away, you know, helps remove the distractions of every type. So, like, I always like to think about giving up television or internet or something, right, and then replacing that with prayer or going to church, et cetera. And when you look at it that way in terms of making room for God, I think it does. It is really what Lent is about.
That's beautiful. That's quite beautiful. But I'll just, you know, go on with a question or two that came up, because
sure.
I don't know where to really go with that. I will say, I'm censoring myself. I'll tell you what crossed my mind, which is, at the risk of sounding anti-Semitic or whatever, I hope this doesn't sound too Jewish, but there's something else going on as far as I am concerned, or, you know, in my opinion with Lent, which is that it is true that by some economic exchange that I do not understand but that I respect, mortifications and penances and giving up things kind of buy grace. And
right.
You see this if you read the stories of the saints and so forth. You know, they were not, you know, neurotic or psychotic when they scourged themselves or when they fasted or when they wore hair shirts or whatever. There is a funny exchange there where if you take on mortifications or penances or whatever, it somehow buys grace. There's somehow an exchange where these sacrifices offered up to heaven somehow inspire a downflow, you know, a flowing from heaven to earth of grace. And I think that's a work also with the fasting and so forth. That, and when I opened the show talking about the you know, awareness of faults that seems to come during Lent, I think part of that increased consciousness of faults is a grace that, you know, is inspired in part by what's given up, or, you know, so there you have it.
No, and that's interesting, because it also leads into the other thing that now you said, which visiting priest said so eloquently, was that he had a very practical, had a couple of practical suggestions, but when you are, you know, giving something up, he said, give it up for someone, like offer it up for someone in particular. And that will help you continue with your practice, because I think you're right. It does buy grace for you or for that person, you know, et cetera, when you make these sacrifices. Even small sacrifices can be very important. I also just popped into my mind the other thing. You know, we all struggle with, we give up something and then we long for them. We want it, whatever it is, right? We want to. You know, I gave up television, but I really want to watch that NCAA basketball tournament, whatever it is. And the other practical thing he says is that every time that you long for something in Lent that you've given up, ask God to long for him as much as you long for the thing that you've given up. And that's worked very effectively for me this Lent. And again, this priest was a very young priest too, which is just very, it's very, just amazing to me, you know, just how young some of these priests can be and all the wisdom and knowledge and what you can learn from them about your spiritual life.
Yeah, sounds like you were quite graced with that Lenten mission for the visiting priest. Let me ask you a question which actually came up from reading your a little bit about your witness testimony that you sent me beforehand, which is that, people very often ask, me when I'm doing my shtick, in a parish or whatever, how do you evangelize Jews? Or, I have this Jewish son-in-law or whatever. How should I, preach to him or evangelize? And in your witness testimony, it came across very beautifully that your Catholic wife, it sounds like, I don't want to say she just evangelized you by kind of silent love or something, but it wasn't preaching to you. But nonetheless, the witness of her faith had a profound effect on you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I say that she did nothing and everything for my conversion, because basically, she didn't force me to do anything. You want to get married in Catholic Church? Fine. She didn't force me at all, and I never realized, how difficult and everything was, but I think just right. She never preached to me at all about converting, about anything, and I think just the way she just lived her life, all she had to do was just live, her life according to her Catholic faith, which is very strong, which comes from her family, and she didn't have to do anything special. And I she just brought me along. And in fact, I know, I sort of look at marriage as you're supposed to really help your spouse get to heaven, and I feel like she's done so much more on getting me to heaven than vice versa. But who knows? I still have time to try to catch that up. But yeah, it was maybe it's sort of like, if you love something, you have to let it go. Well, she completely let it go, and it just came naturally, I think, by just the way she raised the children, the way she dealt with me, just in a loving way, following her Catholic faith.
At the risk of sounding anti-male chauvinist, sometimes I think I agree 1,000% that one of the key purposes of marriage is for each spouse to help the other to get to heaven. But sometimes I think the wife helps the husband get to heaven by the example of her love and so forth. And the husband helps the wife get to heaven by all of the suffering that he imposes on her, which helps her self-perfection.
I think hopefully it's been less along the years, less suffering. I'll have to think about that.
Because someone who accepts, suffering and loves the persecutor, that's tremendous grace and merit there, right?
Right.
Anyway, and just speaking for myself, not speaking for you, I would not dare. If you feel comfortable talking about it, if you don't, I understand. But I'm wondering, I'm putting myself in the position a little bit of your kids and wondering what this all meant to them. First of all, the Jewish father, Catholic mother, and then the Jewish father becoming a rather enthusiastic Catholic. How did they take it all?
Yeah, so they were sort of young, and in fact, it was sort of a joke between my oldest in 2004 when I came into the church was receiving First Communion. So she was 8, and so it was a big joke, like who's going to receive First Communion first? So she had a baby naming ceremony. Right, and my son had a bris, et cetera, but there wasn't that much, because the only one that was really pushing the Judaism so much in my family was my wife, who said, well, it's Hanukkah, she wanted to learn all about these traditions, as well. But they, it was seamless, really, for them. It is a little difficult even today. My 14-year-old says, well, you can't be Jewish and Catholic at the same time. And I said, no, yes, you can, and I am, and I'm a Hebrew Catholic. And he still has a little struggle with that, but I'm sure he'll come around eventually.
Give him my book.
Yes, eventually I will.
Yeah. I mean, in some sense, the Catholic Church says that you can't be Catholic without also being Jewish, in a sense, right? Our father in faith, Abraham.
Yes, and I do remember my RCA director telling me once the story, they have to make sure they watch people. I guess it's one reason why it's a 9-month program to make sure that they're true, that there's no ulterior or hidden agenda for them, why they want to become Catholic. And he said there was only once time in all his years of being an RCA director to help people with conversions that he almost did not let a person convert. And this was a woman who couldn't understand how Jesus was Jewish. She just couldn't understand it. She says, no, you're either Jewish, I don't know, she couldn't understand it. And he finally relented and he said, all right, I'm gonna let her in and I'm gonna hand her over to the Holy Spirit. But she said eventually he came around. But that really, emphasized to me how fundamental, that tenet is. And, it is something I like to tell my Jewish friends. you're letting all the Christians steal your Messiah.
Steal our heritage, so to speak. It's also good to, I think it's one of the benefits or one of the gifts of being a Jew in the Catholic Church is it's really good for Catholics to hear that we are still Jewish or think we're still Jewish because the Catholic Church is the continuation of Judaism after the coming of the Jewish Messiah. And that's not the natural way very often that cradle Catholics think of it. They just don't wake up to the fact that Jesus was Jewish. In fact, the first time I celebrated a Passover Seder for a Catholic parish in a Catholic church, I was up there leading the Seder, and this woman corners the pastor in the kitchen saying indignantly, how dare you let him stand up there and say that Jesus was Jewish?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess she had to. Well, that's one thing. It's always good, having the catechism around too, because people, you can just point out it's right there, which is another beautiful thing we have, is you can actually explain what the teaching of the Catholic Church is. I find that people like the fact that I'm an RCIA and my RCA director, I've been a team member for many years, and even though I don't have the same religious upbringing, as you did, or many other Jewish people did, I have enough where I bring a slightly different perspective because of my Jewish heritage, and they find that to be, very useful as people are coming into the church and have questions.
Yeah, simply the witness. I mean, there are very few disadvantages to being born a Catholic, and of course, it's the biggest advantage conceivable to be, to have the relationship with God, which is made available in the Catholic Church. But one of the potential disadvantages is basically taking things for granted and thinking that the reason to be Catholic is because your family came from Ireland or because your parents were Catholic or whatever, and not understanding that it is basically simply the system that God established for the greatest unity between God and man during the period between birth and death. And that there's a far more profound reason to want to be Catholic than because your parents happen to be Catholic. And when they see Catholic converts or Catholics in the church or Protestant converts, or I had a Hindu convert on the show once, it wakes them up to the fact that this is not, this is not an issue of ethnic identity, like being, Irish or Italian or something. This is much bigger than that. This is cosmic. This is about, God and man and the human soul.
Yes, and I find also, I've also spoken to some of the kids. The kids find it fascinating when they're in religious ed classes. And adults being baptized? And adults? I've spoken to some, and they're like, wow, why would you choose that? Why would you not? It's very interesting to hear their questions. And this year, for the first year, we've had, you know, these kids, six, you know, first graders and second graders write letters. They were all wrote letters to the people coming in into the church. And you should just see the wisdom flowing out of these kids. It's just amazing. But, you know, that is, I think, why, a lot of people regularly go to our mass. I'm blessed to have like five different masses on Sunday and one on Saturday you can't attend. And one is always the RSA mass, and people like to get up early to go to that mass so they can follow. It helps them in their faith when they see other people coming into the church who are adults who've actually made this decision, you know, for them, themselves.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned in passing a couple of minutes ago the catechism of the Catholic Church. And it's true that, you know, it's a wonderful resource for knowing what the Catholic Church teaches. But I remember growing up, you know, I don't know how to put it, but you hear all kinds of different demands by different voices about how you should live your life and what's important and what you should do. And I remember, in some sense, crying out to God saying there should be an owner's manual for being a human being. There ought to be an owner's manual for life, right? You buy a car, you have an owner's manual about what's good for the car, what's bad for the car, how you're supposed to treat it, and so forth. If only there was an owner's manual for life. And that's also what the catechism is, right? It's an owner's manual for life.
Yes. The two books I put in that category are the catechism and particularly the Boy Scout manual for young boys. I mean, and that's good for anyone. Everything in that Boy Scout manual will teach you about all the practical things in life and reverence as well. So those two books I would put in the category as good owner's manual.
But the boys, that is intrinsically Christian, if I can say so. In other words, that Boy Scouts manual flows from Christianity. It would not be the same Boy Scouts manual in Islam or something.
Yeah, I mean, at least what mine is saying, I've been a scout leader for a few years, and I think it comes out of Judeo-Christian values, but as long as one of the things a Boy Scout has to profess is reverence to God. And so they Boy Scouts can be of any faith. But if you say that you're an atheist, I don't know if the Boy Scouts, I don't know if they would reject you, but they would say, look, it's going to be really hard for you because your kid has to stand up and he has to say that, you know, he's being reverent to God. And how can he do that, you know, if you really don't believe in God? But yes, there are a number of practical things in there. And, the thing I really love about Boy Scouts is it teaches, you know, boys how to be leaders as well, and no one gets hurt. It's not so much about, you know, camping or merit badges or all like, but it really is, it teaches them, it puts them in leadership roles and teaches them, you know, about very basic things about life.
Yeah. Well, I'm not much of an expert on Boy Scouts. Not having been allowed to be one, but that's another story. My parents were Holocaust refugees, so they had coming from Germany, they had the suspiciousness of American things, like they were kind of intrinsically Christian.
Right.
So, for instance, Thanksgiving, my parents never celebrated Thanksgiving because it's like, well, Christmas is a Christian holiday and Easter is a Christian holiday. You know, Thanksgiving must somehow be a Christian holiday. So, and somehow Boy Scouts ended up in that basket of a kind of a Christianizing influence. So maybe I pushed that a little bit too hard. Anyway, we've unfortunately come to the last couple of minutes of the show. Okay, you can do one of two things. You can just say whatever you want to say, and if you have any words of wisdom for our audience, or if you want to say anything about where you think your journey is leading you, pretty much it's just, you know, kind of a blank sheet for the next 2 minutes, so to take wherever you want.
Sure. Well, I don't know exactly where my journey is leading me, but I just I feel like, you know, I need to learn, you know, so much more about the Catholic faith, and I'm just trying to learn as much as I can. I love, you know, sharing my faith, and I love, you know, following the teachings and being Catholic, and that's what I'm going to continue to do, and hopefully, share that with other people. And hopefully I can be a witness to other people as well, just by living my life the way my wife did for me. I thank you very much too for inviting me on the show and for writing your book. It really was one of the first things I read after I converted or was completed, and it was very helpful to me to put things in perspective as well. That's really all I have to say, and praise God.
Praise God. That's right. Baruch Hashem. Blessed be his holy name. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I know that it's been interesting and edifying for me. I suspect it has been for our listeners also. And of course, I want to thank our listeners. By the way, if you want to, you either being Richard or you being the listener, want to listen to the show again or download it and share it with somebody, the shows are archived on the Radio Maria website, radiomaria.us, as well as on my website, salvationisfromthejews.com, and they're available for free download, as I said, to listen again or to share with others. And again, thank you, Richard, and thank you, listeners, for your presence today on the show. And I hope you join us again next week, same time, same place, for Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism on Radio Maria. Bye for now.